This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Ritual and Shelter. Looking for a magical place to shop and hold space? Check out Ritual and Shelter in Homewood, Alabama. Browse through their bookshelves covering topics of magical history, theory, and practice, as well as tarot cards and oracle decks from well-known artists and even decks created by local witches in Alabama. From teas, tonics, and tinctures to toad skulls and tourmaline towers, you can find all of these and so much more on their witchy website, ritualshelter.com, or in person. So lather up that flying ointment and travel down to Ritual and Shelter in Homewood, Alabama, or check them out online at ritualshelter.com. Did you run out of flying ointment? Well, they have that too. This season of The Witch Wave is brought to you in part by Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab. Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab is a fragrance house specializing in body and household blends with a dark, romantic, gothic tone. Over the years, they've collaborated with some of my very favorite creative visionaries, including Neil Gaiman, Jim Jarmusch, the Jim Henson Company, and most recently, Junji Ito. They continually return to inspirations drawn from witchcraft, paganism, and mythology, and they also have a sister store called Twilight Alchemy Lab, which creates oils blended and consecrated specifically for ritual use. The lab recently released their annual Halloween perfume collection, a limited edition series which includes scents inspired by folklore accounts of lycanthropy. Customer reviews of their products can be found at the fan-run BPAL.org web forum, and you can check out all of their perfumes and other enchanting concoctions over at BlackPhoenixAlchemyLab.com. The world is filled with bewitching people, and you might be one too. Welcome to the podcast where art is magic, magic is real, and reality is stranger than dreams. I'm Pam Grossman, and this is The Witch Wave. Hello, and welcome to The Witch Wave. And happy, happy Beltane. Yes, lovely ones, this episode is dropping on May 1st, which is Beltane. And this is one of my very favorite pagan holidays. This is a time to celebrate flourishing and fertility in all its forms. And traditionally, it's also a time of lighting bonfires and dancing around a maypole or getting busy with a lover or lovers in the middle of a field to try and encourage your crops to grow hardy. So if you didn't have plans for today, well, now you do. It's also a holiday associated with fairy folk and spirits, because remember, it's directly opposite Samhain on the pagan wheel of the year, and so these two holidays are seen as mirrors of each other. And that reminds me, if you happen to be in the Southern Hemisphere as you're listening to this, happy Samhain! So anyway, I love Beltane because it's a time of joy and frolicking and basking in beauty. And in witchcraft, it's considered an extremely fertile time, whether biologically speaking or spiritually speaking. Now, as you've heard me mention on many other episodes, my relationship with fertility and creativity is one that I've been thinking about a lot, particularly now that I'm in my 40s, and specifically because in my case, as you know, I've chosen not to be a mom, at least in this lifetime, as I always say. And earlier this season, I think it was on the Chelsea Wolfe Triple Rock Goddess episode. I mentioned how the mother phase of the maiden, mother, crone, triple goddess structure didn't quite click with me these days, and how I have been searching for another name for this phase. And I realized recently that tarot actually provided me with a perfect alternative. Because the phase of life that I'm currently in feels hugely nurturing and creatively fertile, and the card that feels most representative of those vibes is the Empress. And the Empress card also has big Beltane energy. First of all, in the Smith-Rider-Waite version at least, she is literally sitting next to a heart-shaped shield that has the symbol of Venus on it. And we are in Taurus season after all, and that's associated with Venus. The Empress is also draped in a gown covered in pomegranates, which is a symbol of fertility thanks to its many bejeweled seeds. She's also surrounded by lush growth, with a field in front of her and a forest behind her and a stream that pours replenishing waters at her feet. And she is lounging on cushions and pillows. It's not a stiff, formal throne. She is totally at ease and comfortable in her power, even luxuriating in it. Now, the Empress can absolutely also represent motherhood and procreation, but I think she's wildly expansive and inclusive of all other kinds of creativity too, all other kinds of fertility and flourishing. So if you are a literal mother, of course, the Empress is absolutely for you, but she is also for all of those other aspects of us that are not about mothering, but that are about flourishing and nurturing our creative power. This is a card which is all about radical care and wild thriving. And that's exactly the kind of energy I feel like I want to embrace in this period of my life. And so lately, I've been reconfiguring the triple goddess for myself to now be the maiden Empress crone. And I've been declaring this stage of my life as my Empress phase. And so if that language feels resonant for you too, and if that imagery feels resonant for you too, you are so welcome to adopt it as well. The Empress brings deep love and generativity and a tender but assured confidence to everything she makes and grows. And that's how I intend to keep approaching my own life, my own work, my relationships, and my offerings. All hail the Empress! Now, I've been marinating on this idea for months, but this episode in particular seems like a very aligned time to declare it publicly, not only because it's Beltane, but also because my guest today, Christopher Marmolejo, is all about deconstructing, decolonizing, reappropriating, reconfiguring, and resignifying the archetypes of the tarot in imaginative and liberatory new ways. I found my conversation with them to be endlessly inspiring, and I have a hunch that you'll think so too. But before we get to that, first, let's check and see what's come through on the Witch Wire.
Who is it? Witches.
Hi, Pam. It's Jen again. I wanted to send this follow-up note to express my deepest, deepest gratitude to you for sharing our solar eclipse Knot of Isis recitation ritual with your listenership and the worldwide witch web. I thought you might be interested in hearing how it went, so I wanted to send this note. It was a truly magical experience, and I wanted everyone who felt called to participate to know just how much their power and their presence was felt with us. We were in a small shrine in the back of the Philae complex that had no real light or ventilation, but when we started the recitation, the candle flame that we had lit started dancing all over the place, and we heard doves starting to coo outside. So I know very much that your energy was with us in that space. I also wanted to send a quick thanks to Phyllis Curott as well, who live streamed her recitation on Instagram during our ritual. And in the meditation that we held after the recitation, I received the message that we had done good magic and the offering was very well received by the goddess. So I wanted to pass along that note to everyone who felt called to participate. I do believe that Fiona may have a spot or two left for her November Egypt experience. So if anyone's been considering it, I can definitely recommend it. She put together an incredibly thoughtful opportunity and she was a wonderful facilitator. I can't imagine a more magical way to experience such an extraordinary place. And if any of you are thinking about going to Egypt at all on your own, please be sure to visit both the Isis temple at Philae and the temple dedicated to the goddess Hathor at Dendera. Both incredibly magical, special, special sites. And I think you'll know what I mean when you get to experience them for yourself. So lots of love again and the deepest of gratitude. And I wish you all well.
Hi, Jen. Well, it's not often that I get to hear back from the folks who send me Witchwire questions and voice memos, so I want to thank you for this rare treat. I love a follow-up, and I encourage anybody who sends in a question to follow up with me and let me know how things have turned out once I've responded to you. So, Jen, I am so thrilled to hear that you had such a glorious trip to Egypt with Fiona Horn that she organized. Though I'm not surprised because it sounded pretty amazing when you described it before you left. And I love hearing about the flickering flame and the doves cooing during the Isis ritual. It's those little clues, those cosmic breadcrumbs that affirm for us that we're on the right track and that spirit of whatever name you choose to call it is present. And getting that later message from spirit in your meditation as well must have felt so incredible too, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing it with us. And I'm also happy to have another opportunity to talk about the Knot of Isis passage from Normandy Ellis's book, Awakening Osiris, which you adapted for your ritual. And we talked about this last time you sent your Witchwire question in, but I wanted to expand upon it. Because a big motif in Ellis's Knot of Isis section is redness, the power of redness, the magic of red. In Egyptian mythology, the goddess Isis is associated with a red knot called a teat or tiet. In English, it's spelled a host of different ways, but if you look up T-Y-E-T in Wikipedia, you will find it. And you'll also find images of it at various museums around the world, too. I'll link to it in the show notes for Patreon backers as well, so you can see this iconography. It's just beautiful. And I also ordered myself a beautiful red Knot of Isis pendant from Etsy. So if you care to add something to your own magic making, that's always an option too. Anyway, this teat, this Knot of Isis, some believe to be based on a knotted bit of cloth that people in ancient Egypt may have used to soak up menstrual blood. Others have surmised that this red knot shape might be a representation of a uterus, ovaries, and vagina. But regardless, this shape, this symbol, was made into red amulets that scholars now associate with Isis's magic and protection and with the magic of creation. Now remember, just as with the Empress archetype, and honestly with any archetype, the magic of the Knot of Isis is for everyone, regardless of gender, sex, or the reproductive system one may have. But in this case, we're talking about divine feminine power. And that transcends the confines of literal material circumstances or structures. So we're talking archetypally and inclusively. Anyhow, this got me thinking about red magic. This is magic that is often associated with life, with blood, with creativity, with luck. Of course, the alchemists called the red phase of alchemy rubedo, or the rubedo phase. This is the phase of wholeness, of integration, of rebirth, of beauty, of sensuality, of life energy. And this color, of course, has significance cross-culturally. I'm thinking of everything from the red string that one ties around their wrist in Jewish folk magic as a protective amulet, and which modern Kabbalah students also sometimes wear now. I'm also thinking of the color red in Chinese culture, which signifies vitality, good fortune, and celebration. And I'm thinking of the redness of indigenous culture, which today you'll hear my guest Christopher Marmolejo discuss in the context of their work and their approach to what they call Red Tarot, which also happens to be the name of their book. And so with that, I thought I'd read a little more of Normandy Ellis's Knot of Isis invocation. It ends with these words. I walk in harmony, heaven in one hand, earth in the other. I am the knot where the two worlds meet. Red magic courses through me like the blood of Isis, magic of magic, spirit of spirit. I am proof of the power of the gods. I am water and dust walking. So splendid. Well, with that, I just want to thank you again for your message, Jen, and for sharing your magic and your follow-up with me, and for spreading Isis's creative, loving red magic throughout the world. Now, on to my guest. Christopher Marmolejo is a brown, queer, and trans writer, diviner, and educator. They use divination to promote a literacy of liberation, and their new book, Red Tarot, A Decolonial Guide to Divinatory Literacy, is an in-depth exploration of how tarot can be a tool of freedom, magical interrogation, and energetic support for anyone, and particularly for BIPOC folks. Christopher was born and raised in San Bernardino, California, among the pines, in community with the Serrano clan. With nearly a decade of experience as a trained educator focused on cultivating classrooms of emancipatory possibility, they work with students around the world to plant and nurture the seed of a divinatory practice, finely weaving tarot, astrology, and curanderismo with critical, decolonial, Black, queer, feminist epistemology. They offer tarot readings and astrology readings, as well as limpia cleansing sessions per their ancestral folk healing practice. They also teach many online workshops and write a truly splendid Substack newsletter called The Red Read. Christopher joined me from their home in California via Zoom. Christopher Marmolejo, welcome to the Witch Wave.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so thrilled to speak with you. I'm such an admirer of your brain and your work. You're such, first of all, a beautiful writer. So it's a real thrill to get to talk to you.
Wow, thank you. That's such a compliment. I mean, for the brain one, I said last night at a book reading that I gave, I not only wanted it to be well thought, but well written. And so that feedback really means the world. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, it really is, I think, a challenge as a writer, especially as writers of nonfiction, we're tasked with hopefully synthesizing a lot of material, but then making it a pleasure to read. And this book is poetic and lyrical. And I really just love the way that you use language, in addition to it being juicy as fuck and having so much for us to contemplate. So just a huge bravex on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So why don't we dive right in? And I'm going to start at the top with your title. Your book is called Red Tarot, A Decolonial Guide to Divinatory Literacy. And you write at the top of the book, right in the intro, about this concept of redness. And you write about it so beautifully, but I would love for our listeners to be brought into this notion of redness. So can you tell me why you titled this Red Tarot?
Yes, absolutely. Redness, first and foremost, as a marker of indigeneity, right? Like the red folk, the red inside of the brown. I also identify as brown, of course. And in the Ten of Pentacles, I get all into Jose Esteban Munoz's work about brownness and brown worldings and all that stuff. But at the heart, at the root, it is red, and it's multivalent in that it's passionate, and it's about blood, and it's about the history, right? And the red path, you know, the red thread that you wrap around your hand when you're cleansing yourself of curses, of mal ojo, of susto, of soul loss. And at the same time, connecting this to other texts that have been primary and foundational for the work that I hope Red Tarot exists within, being Red Skin, White Masks by Glenn Sean Coulter, Red Pedagogy, Red Medicine. There is these primary red texts that I would return to throughout and have combined the spiritual aspect in terms of like red medicine, especially in looking at indigenous ways of healing and thinking about and being in community. And then Red Skin, White Mask is very much pushing against inclusion by the state, being legible to the state. They're also connecting to Black Skin, White Mask by Fanon. And so, you know, I wanted Red Tarot to honor those previous works, those teachers as well, amidst all of the writers that I write about are included here. And at the same time, add a spin to tarot, which you often get, a little white book, you know, that accompanies a deck, right? And to read red, it must vivify you. It's not just this disembodied thing. It's not just this mental exercise for pure self-reflexivity or contemplation. There's real lives at stake. I give readings and I see how applicable they are to my clients in their navigation of all these isms and all the domination in the world, as well as like looking for love and dealing with the erotics of themselves and their relationships. So red felt very expansive and multivalent for me. And at the same time, it speaks to the political nature of being not just this leftist liberal who ends up reproducing a lot of the race. Like there's a lot of racism there, but they just don't know that they're racist or.
Yes.
It's very strange, right? So the red reading gets to a politicization and erotics and an honoring of the ancestors and the teachers that I stand upon.
So beautiful. And there's so much to unpack there. One of the questions that I could foresee a reader of your book asking you or asking themselves is, why is the tarot a tool that someone like yourself feels drawn to decolonialize? Like, I understand this is like I think a lot of my listeners are very familiar with the fact that tarot is rooted in Western Eurocentric iconography. It's very, I mean, it's very Christian rooted as well. There's a lot of like Christian mysticism that's baked in there. And of course, tarot stretches back for hundreds of years. A lot of people are going to be most familiar with the images of Pamela Coleman Smith. And that's where a lot of the Christian mystic iconography really gets sort of amplified. And I love Pamela Coleman Smith, but she clearly is coming from a certain corpus of knowledge and, you know, from her own perspective, especially as a member of like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and so on. You know, let me actually start an even more basic question. What attracted you to tarot initially? And then what made you want to find more of yourself and your own ancestry in the cards?
Such a great question. The tarot kept getting put into my hands in a sense. And I wanted to dispel the myth very much that you don't need to be gifted a tarot deck or anything. Like if you feel called to the tool, you know, very much like feel free, take liberty to go and pursue it. And at the same time, I did get readings at pivotal moments, gifted readings that I hadn't sought out from some elders. And then friends would gift me decks like years later. And I started reading more regularly once I also became a 7th and 8th grade English teacher. And so there was a concurrent theme of literacy and teaching and divination, though they weren't merged in the way that they are for me now, or now I have this book about divinatory literacy and I teach divination. There were two streams concurrent, but not yet crossing. And then once the pandemic hit and I was teaching in Santa Cruz, I got my master's in education in Santa Cruz. It was my Jupiter return. Had this amazing feedback and impact with students. I was LSU advisor and co-advisor for BSU. And there was a handful of students of color on campus. There was more queer students on campus. But I saw how much of an impact that my positionality and my praxis and my politics had upon the student body. Then I came back home wanting to teach to my community and could not get hired. And then the pandemic hit and was very much at a crossroads and was very much burnt out from the academy and the intense, immense labor, not just intellectually, but emotionally that goes into teaching. Teachers are just so highly skilled. Like they require so many skill sets. It's truly unbelievable and get paid dust, you know, and then are threatened with gun violence, like on the regular. Before I, when I was substitute teaching, there was unfortunately two gun violence at a school right down the street from my home and that I had subbed at literally the week before. And that was devastating. It still ripples. And it's like, I still have, of course, the soft spot in my heart for students and my passion for education is there. But at the same time, I was feeling my own unraveling. And the only thing that helped me was tarot. It was like I was in the darkness. I went in extra heavy then and I started reading and wanting to learn really how to use it and how it would show up and how accurate it could be or whatnot and its various uses. I kind of became comfortable. I started learning with the Santa Muerte tarot. It's not a Rider-Waite system fully, you know, and the images aren't wholly to the Rider-Waite deck. It took me some time to get to that set of iconography because of its westernized, like very Eurocentric, you know, imagery and whatnot. And it was just not at all resonant. And that's something I often hear from students. But then as I did eventually get to it, because I was just like, wow, I'm really into all of the art that tarot has. I think something that draws me to it is the viscerality of the image. I have a Libra moon and I love being able to like literally have art in my hands that I'm able to work with clients and draw up a small gallery of the psyche, of the past, of the present, of the future, of the emotions, and have them applicable in a very visceral way that the catalyst for literacy in that moment and a catalyst for awakening consciousness that is in line with how I learned to be an educator, teaching ESL students. You start with an image. You don't start with text. You generate language from video, from the image that we all can respond to. Then as I did get into the Rider-Waite deck, I really saw it as great to see almost a little colonizer inside, like the modes of conditioned, internalized colonial consciousness, and then externalize them and then critique them and then like pivot them and consider them against their astrological associations. So there was that. And I found it very rich. Like you need to see more clearly and identify when these modes are activated rather than just taking on like some alternate quote unquote purified native aesthetic or something and just trying to like rid yourself or wash yourself of the influence of all of the conditioned colonization domination that has been internalized by all folks for generations and generations. I grew up in relation and in community and kin with the Serrano people, with the people of the Pines here. And yet I am not a formally recognized tribal card carrying citizen. And I write about that through the book, but especially within Temperance, in which blood quantum you know, as a colonial mechanism to de-indigenize people and have them self-exterminate. It's very complicated, mm-hmm. of course, in terms of like protecting community. And I wholly understand that. And at the same time, that is but the one drop method of like counting someone black if they have 1/5 or octoroons, or it's the same racialized colonial technology used to deny people rights of citizenship, deny people rights of belonging. Mm-hmm. The tarot for me became and has become this type of prostheses, you know, this prosthetic that I can use to mend this very liminal space that I occupy as a queer person, as a trans person, as a native person, but as not like a as someone who has been invited into community and into certain ceremonies. And at the same time, there is this feeling of bastardization, you know, mm-hmm. because of the violence that my bloodline has, and that so many Latinos, especially so many Mexicans or so many various peoples of Latin origin and whatnot carry as well. It's like the awkward birds in the urban setting. Like, how are we to find a relationship most to our intuition, you know, to our abilities to divine, to prophesize, to foresee, to commune? Mm-hmm. And I think that tarot, I just innately sense and had the sense that it was fulfilling that role, but I also needed to supply it with a language and with the prophets who aren't maybe normally regarded as prophets in the ways that we perhaps think of Rachel Pollack or someone or any astrologer or, you know, Abu Mashar or something like that. June Jordan, bell hooks, Toni Morrison, like these are prophets. Like, you know, these are people prophesizing fully. And I wanted their language, their thought, Sandy Grande, Sherry Moraga, to be paired with the precisely and explicitly divinatory tool that is tarot.
So that's a great segue into how this book is structured and like the meat of the book. So for somebody who hasn't yet read it, and I truly hope everybody will, the book, to your point, it weaves together for every card. You have so many quotes from all of these incredible thinkers who are often black or brown or queer and hold these different identities that are distinctly against white supremacy, which is really exciting and really smart and really inspiring. The other thing that I think is so unique about this book is the way that it's structured. I think most listeners will be familiar with the quote unquote order of tarot. Usually you have the major arcana and then you go into the minors and there's four suits. It often starts with the ace and goes through 10 and then you have the court cards. You have structured this book so differently. And I would love for you to first tell us how you structured it and why you structured it that way.
Absolutely. So I did structure it more so numerically in a different numeric kind of association than is also already out there with the teacher cards and the, you know, you would like add them together, distill them to get the teacher card or whatnot. Chapter one, you're able to get the major arcana cards that for me, I was thinking about in with the principle of one, the magician, the wheel of fortune, the pages for beginnings, like some of the court and then the elemental aces. And so within each chapter, you're getting a comprehensive read, if you will, of the tarot that more closely resembles the way that we actually read tarot. And that's another reason, you know, when reads tarot, when you do a reading, you're getting a randomized array of cards. You're going to get some major arcana, you know, you're going to get some court cards, you're going to get some minor cards. That does happen sometimes where you're like, whoa, there's a whole sequential happening
but
right
it's,
now.
But it's rare.
It's rare and it's notable, right? And versus the array of cards that you usually, it, like, again, it more closely resembles the way that we actually read tarot, while still having an underlying structure. And at the same time, I think that it unveils certain themes across suit between major or minor arcana that change, again, the way that we think about the cards as a whole or how tarot works or how it's working.
Mm-hmm. So let's give another example just so people can really crystallize this in their mind. So for section three, under the chapter heading or section three, where, of course, you deal with the threes of all the suits, but you also have chosen to include the Empress, Death, and the Queens. So for those who aren't like super tarot heads, can you explain why some of those, we'll call them like personified cards, or we'll just say like the major arcana and the court cards, like why is Death a three card?
Yes, totally. And then within each section, I also start just on the number itself, right?
Yes. a lot of the references that you make when you're describing each of these, we'll just call them archetypes, you're often drawing from non-Western corpuses of mythology and magic. So you are talking about Mesoamerican deities, Hindu deities, and so on. It's not only like the, I was going to say classical, but in the true sense of the word classical, the Greek and Roman deities that are often compared or called upon or conjured in these cards. Anyhow, please keep going. So the death card number three, yes.
The death card, yes. The death card number three, death card is Arcanum 13. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot of the mode in which I did it is like the bass note or so, or like a different octave, whereas Empress is three, right?
Sure.
Like officially Arcanum three. The Empress is related to mother. If a mother is giving us birth, she is giving us death. You know, it's like the womb and the tomb standing right next to each other. And that has always just been crystal clear in my mind. I took the chance in death as well to pay homage to the first and one of the most significant deaths that I've experienced in my life, which was of my grandmother, you know, and being able to talk about that influence. I'm honored to be able to do that and have that memorialized and into the work, but also influence the thinking of death and death as this agreement. There's so much, of course, death, unjust, tragic, horrible, violent death happening at the moment. And yet at the same time, death is natural. Death should be welcomed. There are various, again, types of death that you will see in various decks that pinpoint the reading more specifically. It is a birth into a new realm, you know, and I remember my mother was in the room when my grandmother died and felt it to be a graduation of sorts, you know, felt her really like was able to hold her hand in that moment. And it was very meaningful. And so I thought that pairing that again against the mother, it just was so clear. And then you get into the queens. For me, like I was thinking about, okay, where am I going to include the courts in each of the sections? And I did keep the standard titles of the cards, you know, it's like they're given, whereas modern decks may change them and whatnot. But I still worked with thinking of, okay, Empress can be mother, Empress is Venus, but also Empress is like a political position within the maintenance of empire and whatnot.
Yep.
As are the queens, of course. Again, queens fitting under the empress. You know, the empress is like the grand one of them all. And then having, let's consider the queens there. And then again, the threes with maintaining that numerical structure. The three of swords, wands, cups, and pentacles.
Sure. I just found it so fascinating and so liberating, like this idea that we can take these preconceived structures, which one could even argue is very, you know, colonialist idea. These preconceived structures and that we each have the ability to like remake them, reconfigure them, draw our own conclusions. There's obviously like a real logic to how you lay out your book, but there's also a lot of like intuition and like mythopoesis and poetry to it that I just find like, oh, so, so delicious. On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. The Witch Wave is sponsored by BetterHelp. So, true story. When I was very little, I had a lot of trouble expressing my feelings, and I would just sort of bottle them up, especially if I had a rough day in elementary school. And the only way that my parents were able to get me to tell them what was on my mind and how I was feeling was to have my dolls ask me. They'd kind of talk to me through my doll and ask me how my day was, and I would open up and tell the doll everything. Now, lucky for them, and lucky for me, and for everyone else in my life, I eventually learned how to express my feelings directly and not through a doll, and therapy has been a huge part of that learning process. Because a good therapist provides a safe place for you to get things off your chest, to vent, to express your emotions, and to learn to let your feelings out in healthy ways so that you don't keep them bottled up or spew them all over the people you care about in unhealthy or inappropriate ways. I sometimes have big feelings and stresses and worries that I need to release because if I keep them bottled up, it starts to affect me and the people in my life in really negative ways. I'm so grateful that I have access to great therapy where I can get this stuff off my chest and feel better. And I think everyone can benefit from therapy because everybody has stuff to get off their chest. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/witchwave today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, spelled HELP.com/witchwave. This episode of The Witch Wave is brought to you by Mithras Candle. Witches know candles are more than just mood lighting or decor. They are powerful tools of wisdom and magic. Candles held sacred significance for our ancestors, embodying hope, renewal, and comfort during the darkest hours. Candle makers, or chandlers, were often spiritual folk, priestesses, monks, druids, and witches, those who knew the significance of these ancient lights. In these modern times, my pagan friends at Mithras Candle uphold this candle-making tradition with reverence. Made by hand, each Mithras candle is a testament to purity and craftsmanship using the most sacred of materials, beeswax. Picture the gentle flicker of beeswax candles carrying the natural aroma of honey and floral notes. And while their Byzantine hand-dripped pillars steal the show, Mithras offers a variety of shapes and colors, including seasonal delights like the soon-to-be-announced green candles for May. Ready to illuminate your space with arcane luxury? Visit MithrasCandle.com today and use offer code WITCH24 to enlighten your world with 24% off your first order. That's M as in magic, I-T-H-R-A-S, candle.com, and use WITCH24 for 24% off your first order. Would you like even more Witch Wave? Do you wish that you could hear from me and my other magical guests on a weekly basis? And what about doing monthly rituals with yours truly? Then come join me over on Patreon, where you'll get bi-weekly bonus Witchwave Plus episodes, ad-free Witchwave episodes, and detailed show notes for all. I also lead a monthly online magical workshop, which you can attend live or watch the recording of at your convenience. Rewards for some tiers also include magical merch and contests where you can win witchly prizes each month, as well as early heads up about my other workshops before they sell out. And you can even sign up for the opportunity to work with me one-on-one. And all backers get access to our exclusive digital coven where you can connect to a community of other wonderful Witchwave witches around the world. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to patreon.com/witchwave now and sign up. It's a magnificent way to get more magic in your life and to support the show. Thanks so much. Welcome back to The Witch Wave. Today, I'm speaking with Christopher Marmolejo. So, Christopher, earlier in our conversation, you brought up temperance, and it's so interesting intuitively that that came to your mind because that is one of the cards that I highlighted that I was hoping to speak with you about. The way you wrote about this card in particular, I found really moving and really interesting. And you talk about the temperance card as a card of queering something. And I find that to be so evocative and moving. I could see how it's a card of like transcending binary or blending binary, blending polarities maybe, and showing that it's all a spectrum because, of course, it's the angel kind of mixing the two fluids together or, you know, however you want to describe it. But I would just love to hear you talk about temperance and what that card means to you.
Absolutely. I love to hear what cards come up for people. Tarot is an archive upon archive. So it's just so brilliant. I haven't been able to talk about this card yet. And so thank you. Temperance is such a magnificent card. You do see an angel typically depicted upon the image. That's really big. You know, that is something really big. You get the sense of conversion immediately that I had to really sit with. And to temper something is to take it to extremes and then to find the stable center. Right. So going through the process of temperance can be a real trial upon your spirit. Like it can really put you in the flames and cook you and then drop you in the ice cold waters and then like do that 100 times over till you forge this steel of spirit and whatnot. And I think that there is something of temperance to be offered to folks who do exist between worlds or between faces or who have some multi-raciality, who have a sense of polytheistic vein within them. And a lot of it too, you know, growing up culturally Catholic, thankfully was not too dogmatic in that I had a lot of space to commune with the wind and with animals and with the hills and with the birds and have a lot of nature surrounding it and yet still be able to have enough of a tactile connection to cultural Catholicism in a sense, but also needing to critique it and wash some of it away. And like, how much can I take in order to connect just with people in order to like translate in a sense, and that we're able to work upon each other, understanding through a level of faith, through a level of connection to spirit, through a sense of numinosity, through a sense that like we may regard them differently and have a different structure. There may be similarities and convergences, and yet we are believers, yet we acknowledge that spirit is alive and permeating this world and ourselves. And so, how do I do so again with criticality, and that I'm not falling into some of the, you know, the bullshit of the church? And I critique all that in the Hierophant, you know what I mean, very much. And at the
Of
same
course.
time, in Temperance, talk about the conversion, the forced conversion of Native peoples into Western religions, right? But into Protestantism, into Catholicism, and that's some heavy shit, you know, and like, how do you wash yourself clean from the trauma of that in order to restore a sense of, again, spirit, a sense of being able to recognize on some levels, on a psychic level, on a felt level, tracking the omens that occur within your reading space, within your life, that the numinous is around you, that you are seen and that you are witnessed, that you have some sense of guardian benevolence watching over you and from under you. Right. And at the same time, I also talk about temperance as my gender. You know, is this like, but going between spaces? Is this, I have a post I want to write. I don't know that I will eventually get there, but on like the trans feminine mystique, you know, and
Oh,
whatnot.
please do.
That
Please
would,
do.
I think that would be amazing, you know, but the temperance is also seen very much as like both male and female, neither male nor female. This one who is existing divinely, who is two spirit in that sense, very much. And then, yeah, at the same time, you know, I want to maintain not to make queer people divine or angelic, not that they don't have that inherently, but to maintain their humanity, right? Not to like pedestalize them or like they are human, like we are
Of
human here and
course,
whatnot and
of
whatnot.
course.
And again, I talk about temperance with blood quantum for indigenous peoples, that there's this thing of purity in temperance that needs to be critiqued. Right, like trying to wash the spirit scene, and like, what is a pure native? What is a pure quote unquote Indian that falls into the aesthetics of white supremacy? That falls. I've seen a colleague, a collaborator, she's a white woman, tarot reader, who is radical and at the same time had a very, like, the whiteness came out with the way that she envisioned and was critiquing Beyonce in her recent Cowboy Carter album. And like the next album, I wanted to be box braids with salt and pepper. And like Beyonce's a black woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, no matter how she
Yes.
presents, again, we can critique some modes of the visual aesthetics she's having holding up a flag. That's one thing. But having to fall into what some white mind thinks is like native, like, I don't need to wear
Of
feathers in my
course.
hair
Of
or braids all the time
course.
or whatnot. And that's something I often push back against, maintaining this sort of hybridity, but also it's less about the aesthetics and more about the political stance and the mode of solidarity and the mode of relations and the mode of ethics with which we operate. Right. And it's like you can have any identity, but if you still have an internalized allegiance to white supremacy, to patriarchy, to colonization, that will be there if you have not done the active work of decolonizing your mindset, of renouncing these allegiances. You know, it's not just like, oh, I'm No, it's like you, queer person, black person, brown person, red person, native person, like a lot of the kin that I'm in community with, some of them are Catholic and took their native children to Catholic schools. And that was always like, ah, like to my mind, like, it was like,
yeah,
what in the history are we doing here?
Right.
But at the same time, not doing this thing where you're less native than, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like having to have tools that acknowledge the complexity of our inheritances, our complexity of like what we are left to work with and how we have to just still work with them regardless. I thought about conversion. I thought about forced conversion. I thought about the witness of faith, of a divine, miraculous kind of intervention or appearance or manifestation, an epiphany of sorts that would inspire conversion on the other end, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, the going between states, the occupying multiple modes of gender, the liminality that was also a way of being for trans people, being, again, like this mystique, like I very much feel comfortable in my presentation, but at the same time, I honor like somewhat of the witness of like people who I respect and consider, like if they use he or she or someone uses she or like I see it, my ability to be more mask on a given day or more femme on a given day.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that all falls under the temperance umbrella for me.
Yeah.
And whatnot.
And I think it's actually, I mean, I just love listening to you, but I think it's also helpful for someone who, in terms of wanting a foothold into your material and into this book, to hear you really unpack one of the cards, because you're doing it verbally, but throughout this book, each card you do essentially what you just did, where there's some personal autobiographical pieces that you weave in, there's sociopolitical pieces that you weave in and historical pieces, and obviously lots of mythology and magic that you're weaving in. And that's what I think makes this book so special, because you're also not telling us this is what this card means. You know, a lot of these, and this isn't just a guidebook. This is clearly like a thick, juicy, meaty book for us to learn from and contemplate. But I could also see someone choosing to use this as a guidebook. And if they're doing a reading, they flip to temperance and try to get some meaning for themselves. But I also love the ways in which, just by example, you then give each of us permission to bring our own identities and associations to these cards. I don't know. I just find that really illuminating and really, again, like affirming and inspiring, because something I try to tell people about witchcraft, there's not one text, right? It's not the Bible. And even the Bible is a hugely problematic text that's very multivalent and that was told from many perspectives anyway. Right. So like what even is, when people try to say like, this card means this in this like definitive way. And so the ways in which your book interrogates that, unpacks it, but also like liberates each of us to then do that work even further for ourselves, I find really empowering.
Thank you. It was a tall order for myself. That was very much the goal, is to fold some of myself within the book through, again, some personal disclosure at various points. Because at the same time, you know, again, it's that red thing of like the personal becomes a window into a specific formation of the way that these larger structural forces shape. And I don't want to be the authority voice that is just, that has no first person, you know, which like ascribes a certain authority in the way that it's told. And I wanted to very much be like, hey, I'm humble. I have flaws. Like I have been affected. Like I have lost. Like I exist in this particular way. And so I'm going to include that. So you can hopefully sense a bit of humility in what I'm trying to offer and still like get something good from it with, the sociopolitical. And I really deploy a strategic maneuver. And something I'm grateful for was the work of José Espán Muñoz, who is, of course, very beloved and popular. But disidentifications and a disidentifactory move, which is not a wholesale rejection, which would be to be counter-determined by the same structure, but it's sort of taking the cloth that society forces you to wear and becoming a seamstress and like cutting it and weaving a different pattern. And you can't just wholly discard it, because that's just ahistorical. And I stumble or I hesitate because at the same time, you know, I also was on a recent podcast where I was like, no, there is the need to burn it all down. You know, there is a real need. That is a type of black sociality. That's a type of looting. There's the tower. There's the catharsis of burning the slave master's plantation down. That is very much needed. And yet at the same time, like that, I understand the ways that we maneuver through this world is to take something that maybe we weren't supposed to identify with, or something that we were, and totally queering and fucking up the way that you thought it was going to come out, or the way that we thought we were going to relate to it or whatnot. And there's resistance in that. There's creativity in that. There's queerness in that. I mean, I think that's what the cards can do. And that's not to say that they can mean anything you want them to mean, right?
Sure.
Like, because at the other end, I very much am an advocate as well for working with the art on the specific card that you're with, having a strong visual reading ability. When I'm reading for my clients, I'm like, I'm getting this information from a stacking of things, like from the first and foremost, the way that the card is presenting in the specific moment from the specific deck for you, the specific person in the specific time and place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, knowing the astrology behind it and some of the thinking that I've done in relation to that card, whether that's disidentification or blood quantum or queer theory or what have you.
Yeah. Beautifully said. On that note, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. This season of The Witch Wave is brought to you in part by Sphere and Sundry, an astro-magical atelier where you can get expertly elected materia magica, oils, incense, bath salts, salves, inks, beauty oils, and more, which have been ritually crafted during rare, powerful, and benefic astrological configurations. And oh my word, I can tell you firsthand, this is the stuff. These formulas are chosen in accord with the strict requirements of the talismanic tradition outlined in the Picatrix and other ancient grimoires, meaning you can benefit from the power of amazing astrological transits even when the stars haven't aligned. These are incredible tools for witches who are looking to embrace the manifestations and results of their spell work, especially the Luna in Cancer series. And I myself have the Luna in Cancer incense, and it is a dream to use for any kind of lunar magic. Venus Materia can be used for love, glamour, and attraction. Regulus for fame and recognition, Asclepius for healing and transformation, and Deneb Algedi for protection. I also used several of Sphere and Sundry's magical products on site in Greece during our group rituals, and they were so potent and so exquisite. I can't say enough good things about them. Since 2018, Sphere and Sundry have been a key driver in the rising tide of popularity and interest in astrological magic, amassing over 5,000 five-star reviews and field reports on their website. Most orders ship within one business day, and Sphere and Sundry is also well known for their incredible customer service, as they are their magical results, and I can attest to that as well. Learn more and get $10 off your first order at sphereandsundry.com using the code WITCHWAVE. That's sphereandsundry.com, sphereandsundry.com, and use code WITCHWAVE for $10 off your first order.
You've heard me wax ecstatic about Snowy Owl Tea before, and so you will understand why I am so excited to announce that I have teamed up with them to create an exclusive Witch Wave herbal tea blend just for you. Witch Wave Tea combines some of my favorite botanicals, including nettles, rosehip, lavender, elderflower, and vanilla. And there's also some butterfly pea flower in there, which means that if you squeeze some lemon into your tea after it's brewed, the color will change, just like magic. And of course, it comes in Snowy Owl's signature shiny holographic packaging with a brand new black cat and purple moon label, all of which makes me swoon. This Witch Wave tea blend from me and Snowy Owl is now available in the Witch Wave shop while supplies last. So head on over to witchwavepodcast.com/shop to order yours now. It's currently the only place where you can buy this tea blend. But don't forget to also check out Snowy Owl Tea's other delicious tea blends over on their website, snowyowltea.com, and you'll see why I fell in love with their handcrafted, scrumptious, full-leaf tea and blossom blends in the first place. Some of my favorites of theirs include Second Breakfast, which is a blend of lemon, poppy seed, and oat, and 11th Hour Black Tea, which has vanilla and cardamom. Mmm! And best of all, Snowy Owl is offering 10% off any teas ordered from their site using code POTION. So head over to snowyowltea.com and use code POTION for 10% off their house blends. And if you want our new, exclusive, delicious, color-changing Witchwave herbal tea blend, you can order that now over at witchwavepodcast.com/shop. Hi, Witch Wavers. I have exciting news. At long last, we have some new Witch Wave merch available for you now through TeePublic. We decided to go with TeePublic for our new Witch Wave merch because it is a print-on-demand site, which means you can get different variations of the Witch Wave logo printed on t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, magnets, notebooks. Oh my gods, the sky's the limit. And the shirts come in different styles and fabrics and colors and are available in sizes small through 5XL, so you can order whatever you'll feel your most magical in. So head on over to witchwavepodcast.com/shop. Welcome back to the Witch Wave. Today I'm speaking with Christopher Marmolejo. So Christopher, I want to talk about a lot of the other things that you offer, because clearly you offer readings for people that are tarot-based, but you also offer astrology readings, and I learned from your website you're also offering these cleansing sessions, these limpia sessions, and I find that to be really moving. And it makes me think of you as a witch or a brujex or a curandera, whatever word.
Yes.
I hope you're comfortable with me using that language to describe you. When somebody is coming to you for a session, what are some things that you can offer them? And why have you chosen these particular modalities to work in?
I guess I'll start with the curanderismo, which I do love. And I think that that definitely falls under the umbrella of witch, and I very much also am comfortable with the term witch. My mentor, Erica Buenaflor, who has various books on curanderismo, also wrote, you know, a nice blurb for Red Tarot as well, and that was such a great blessing. From her, I learned I love fire limpias. I love working with fire. I have my lot of spirit in Aries, and so for me, fire, again, speaking of fire, purges and cleanses the body. It helps to process our potential into manifestation. At the same time, fire is this arbiter of truth. Like, it just can really break so much heavy, dense energy, or like energy stuck to you. For me, any reading, especially tarot readings, which I do most regularly, are a type of plática, in which they're a type of therapeutic space where there's a moment for cathartic expression for the client, where they can, in the space, give voice to things that they may not be able to give voice to in other relationships and other spaces of their life without shame. And that's a needed expulsion. Like, you need to almost eject it from your body. And then the full limpia will do more work in order to rebalance the energetic body, to provide rituals, to provide, like, I give my clients homework in terms of like, here's a candle, here's a vela, like, here's some instructions in terms of like manifesting or cleansing out or drawing the conclusions and the things that you want into your life. There's a host of limpias that we do. And I think that also goes to the deep psychosomatic, emotional, spiritual rebalancing that needs to happen to bring people back into like right relations with themselves. Mm. And the cards are very visceral. The cards, again, are prognostic and divinatory to get you clarity about what has happened, about what is happening underneath and inside of you, and also how to prepare for what is coming. Whereas the Limpia is much more of like, if you are feeling cursed, if you're feeling stuck in self-doubt and despondency, if you're stagnant, yes, all these things, if you are stuck in fear. And a lot of the clients, like, they're beyond the point of questioning a faith. Like, they're like, oh no, like that place that I was living at was haunted, or yeah, there was some demons there. I do space Limpias as well. And I love those as well. I do those for my homies in Barrio Logan, like especially the bookstore, and somewhere that has a lot of traffic and is attracting a lot of energy, is meant to be like very accessible to a lot of people, will need regular cleansings, because that can be taken advantage of by some predatory spirits and, sure, some whatnot. So there is a psychic defense, there's a psychic cleansing, and that lends to my Scorpio stellium in terms of being capable for. Yeah. And then again, the tarot readings, which are read, you know, which are meant to be a type of critical intervention, at least a temporary decolonization of the self that can help the client understand how their personal situation is again structured and informed by these larger systems of abuse, patriarchy, racism, etc. And then I offer astrology readings, the natal chart reading, and also revolutions readings, which are informed by more recently recovered Islamic medieval timing techniques that get into large scopes of times.
Whoa.
So it's pretty cool. I love what I do. I do love what I do. And I teach, and then I teach various courses.
Yeah. Yes, yes. You teach several courses, many of which people can do sort of live online with you, but then you have a lot of offerings that are pre-recorded that people can go back and order and watch and learn from you on their own timeline. And you have a Substack. I actually wanted to dive just a little deeper before we move on the Limpia, because I so loved the essay that you wrote about also the kind of like intergenerational work that you're doing because of the work your grandmother did as a cleaner in a prison. I would love to hear you talk a little bit about your connection to cleansing and cleaning as like an ancestral magical practice too.
Thank you so much for reading that and for diving into that. I'm truly honored. I had an epiphany moment. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents had me at 16. And so my grandmother watched me often while they were maturing and growing and you know, working and all the things. And her and my grandpa, they worked as cleaners. And I remember going with them to various factories and to like corporate offices and just watching the integrity with which they would clean, and never having a sense of shame about it, but feeling like it to be an intimate time with them, but also, of course, a laborious time for them. And then my grandmother became like head janitor, which she was very proud of, at Patton Psychiatric Hospital in Highland, which is at the base of the San Manuel Reservation, which is the Serrano people, which I grew up in relationship with.
Forgive me, I mixed it up. I thought it was a prison, but I think I was mixing up a different story. So forgive me.
Well, they're both an institution of sorts. So that's my paternal grandmother, who works as a janitor, or worked as a janitor at Patton Psychiatric Hospital, whereas my maternal grandmother was in prison and was part of the firefighter program that they would have for prisoners. I don't know that it's still operating or whatnot, but that was something where they would take inmates and they would learn to fight fires and do fire prevention, and that she found very proud. And so in thinking about my matrilineal lineage in these ways, how, again, they converge in me, it feels so obvious in one sense, and yet like still needed me looking back for that kind of aha and clarity of articulation to see that I'm carrying on the work that they're doing. My grandmother was cleaning literally the physical spaces, and cleanliness is something that I will say is close to holiness or godliness. You know what I mean? Like, there is a sense of like clearing out the chaos and this order. If I am stressed or emotionally overwhelmed, I need to clean my place. I need to like sweep it where energies can get stuck. Like, there's the feng shui, if you will, or there's vivifying of the space that, again, Limpias go towards. And she was there with some severely institutionalized people who were also very violent, and the workers were susceptible to that violence. And that was very common. She never suffered any violence by the hands of any of those inmates. And they were inmates. It was a psychiatric prison, you know, as well. So it's not just
voluntary.
In a similar vein of what the Olympia is doing is like, and the reading is going into, if you can call it mental illness, that colonization enacts upon all of us, the distortion that it acts upon a perception, our relationships, the disembodiment that it causes, and trying to cleanse that, trying to offer a tool, a modality, a session that helps to remove some of that, to wash you and to anoint you and to pray over you and to feel you come back to yourself and eject again whatever that colonial poison and may be that you have fucking you up inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my grandma, again, like this inmate who was very proud of the work she did as a firefighter for that period of time, putting her life at the line, going and fighting fire. It's like a crisis worker type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the work that I do is as a crisis worker. I pull cards when, should we call the cops? Like, how do we save this child from an abusive family situation? Other clients thinking about abortion. My services have been requested, not just, what's my year ahead look like? No, I need help.
High stakes.
Right. High stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we need alternate means of resourcing
mm-hmm.
that aren't normally available, quote unquote, in the like Western standard rational mind ways of doing things. And I'm honored to do that. It takes a lot of work mm-hmm. to maintain such a capacity. But I also just feel that it's a birthright or a legacy that I'm meant to carry on as well.
Beautiful. This is just a question that's popping into my head, so I'm just going with mm-hmm. it. But I speak with so many people on this show who, it's a clunky phrase, but I often appreciate the intention behind the phrase service magician, people who do magic as a service, and there is a fee involved. If it's not money, then it's some kind of bartering or energy exchange, or they're getting housing or whatever it is. They are of service and this is their vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm often struck by the fact that like it does take an immense amount of energy to be of service and to particularly be of service in a spiritual way. And of course, there's like the material, physical labor of showing up too. How do you take care of yourself? How do you cleanse yourself? How do you make sure that you're not taking on too much energy or getting too drained from doing this kind of work?
That's a great question. I think that's something that maybe new practitioners, people who want to build a client basis, maybe aren't fully considering because they're only looking at like the business side or like the client side or whatnot. But one, it's first applying my own medicine daily and regularly. And I write about this as well in The Hermit, and I will say The Hierophant again, in that these powers and this capacity, I got it finally in doing this work. I was like, oh, I get the Holy Spirit now. It's like, oh, you need a Holy Spirit. Like you need like an extra thing to draw upon in these times that you're almost becoming a vessel for this cleansing power, just to remove the like scared ego self or something when you're doing such intense work and the stakes are so high.
Yes.
That you have to be able to connect to a larger source. And that need not be Jesus by any means, okay? It could be a host of deities.
I mean, it can be. I mean, he...
And it can be.
My mom always calls Jesus a nice Jewish boy. So, you know...
I love that. And it can be. Yes,
can be. But whomever or whatever that source is for you, right?
Right, right. I have a daily read that is very ritualized. And I open with like sahumerios, which are just incense cleansing that like also facilitates the divine divination that I can use to cleanse my decks and just keep them clean. I also hear from people who are like, I've lost the connection a little bit. And I've never had that, thankfully,
yeah.
because I regard them with their own personhood and I take care of them in a reverent manner. And I end with fire limpias pretty much daily. You know, depending on if I'm traveling or not.
And Christopher, does that take the shape of incense or candles? Like, what does that actually look like? Because I'm familiar with like egg limpias and washes, mm-hmm. but what does a fire limpia look like when you're doing it at least?
Absolutely. And I will say I do like a barida with the egg limpia and washes as well. I try and do them at least once a month as well, but I do the fires daily. And that's just because of the way my chart is set up and things like that. And that I have a witch's pot, if you will. I have a whole
cauldron.
I have two actually, because I do them so often. I'll do them for class with Epsom salt, and any and all herbs have magical qualities. So whichever ones that you may be drawn to, I choose them based upon the things that I'm wanting to call in or cleanse or purify. Rubbing alcohol and a match. And you can feel immediately like a cleansing, a burning away of whatever like residue on your auric body is, and there's a offering into the flame of intention, of grief, of anything. The fire accepts all, right? And it cleanses and it purifies. And I do that daily. And then also the fire of like energy, like the fire of like being alive and being ready to like go and not be afraid of the flame. But there's a type of like psychic weightlifting that I always say, and I tell my students, the more that you do it, like the stronger you get, the less burnt out that you get by the capacity, or like by a set, quote unquote, if you will.
I love that. You know, a supernatural like, set.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly.
So good. Yeah. So good. I love that. Well, listen, I could talk to you forever. I hope we will speak again. In the meantime, I know that my listeners are going to love you and want to learn more about you and potentially want to work with you. So what are the best ways for them to connect with you and find out what you're up to?
Thank you. I would love to talk to you again. Like, please, anytime. I would highly recommend, first and foremost, my Substack, as you brought up. That is where I am continuing to write. It is an email list, but it's not just an email list. I do live free classes on Substack. You'll get a discount if you subscribe for a full session. That's where I announce when my books open, when my classes open for enrollment. So that's the first and foremost way. And then that's theredread.substack.com, which then leads, of course, to my website, which is where you can book as well and see what events I have happening, look more into my courses that I have. I just started one just the other day, which I'm so excited about. It's such a great cohort. And I have a certain set, but I also love course design. I love teaching and hope to create more as well this year. Then Instagram, that's last on my list because of the whole mishigas of social media and whatnot. Whereas like, if you really want to support me, please sign up for my Substack. Like that's it right there. Yeah.
You using the word mishigas to me right now also just makes me so happy. My ancestors are smiling now. How fabulous. Christopher, I think you are brilliant. You are inspiring. This book is brilliant and inspiring. And I'm just so grateful that you're in the world doing this work. And I'm so grateful you made the time to be on the Witch Wave. Thank you so much.
Thank you so, so much. I'm so honored for your readership and for your engagement and for this invitation. It's been such a pleasure. You are brilliant. And thank you.
That's it for the show. Thank you again to Christopher Marmolejo for sharing their resplendent red magic with me.
Do you have questions, feedback, need some witchly advice, or just want to share something magical that happened to you recently? Please do drop us an email or a voice memo at witchwavepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and you just might make it on the Witch Wire. The Witch Wave is a Phantasmophile production written and produced by me, Pam Grossman. This episode was recorded and edited by Josh Wilcox and or Walter Nordquist and myself. Our theme music is the song Hand and Eye by Lycanthia. Our new Witch Wave logo was designed by Thunderwing. And special thanks, as always, go to Matt Freeman, Lara Antal, and Cece Pascal. You can check out information about this and other episodes on our website and now buy Witchwave merch over at witchwavepodcast.com. Please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, and do consider giving us lots and lots of sparkly stars and glowing reviews. It really, truly does make a difference and helps other people find the show. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at WitchWavePod, and you can check out my witch emoji for iPhone by going to witchemoji.com or downloading it in the App Store. My book, Waking the Witch, is available everywhere now, and the witchcraft book I edited and co-authored for Toshin is as well, so thank you for checking those out too. And if you want more WitchWave, or you would just like to support the show, please do join us over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/witchwave. Thank you so much for listening. Witches are the future. I'll catch you next time on The Witch Wave.